live from across the world, across the globe, from the flat below sea level plains of Holland, where blonde girls ride bikes even in the winter in sub-zero temperatures, to Colorado, Fort Collins, the People's Republic, somewhere over there. This is the first inaugural episode of the Greasy Pole podcast. I'm your host, Adam Piggott. I'm the one in Holland. I'm the talented one in this two-man show. It's a two-man show because I got sick of listening to the sound of my own voice. There's only so many times you can talk to yourself and wait for an answer and the answer doesn't come. So I got together with another chap. You might know him. He's got his own podcast. His name is The Great One. And he's with me live. Well, not live because... Well, he's live for me. Are you there, Great One?
I am here.
Are you live?
I am live for the moment, at least.
That really terrible introduction that I just did was because none of us had any idea what to say. The Great One was completely just an empty head. There was a void. There was air between his ears. You could feel. I felt the onrush of wind coming through the headphones.
It's like a black hole in there. Yes.
Like a black hole. Yes.
Really, really dense and really tiny. Yes.
That's it. Yes. There we go. And this is our first episode. I tell you what, Great One.
Yeah.
I've got high hopes. I've got high hopes for this show. I'm thinking stratosphere. I'm thinking Jordan Peterson will be begging to be on this show.
I agree.
I'm thinking Joe Rogan will be begging us to stop because no one's listening to him anymore.
Because we're a threat. Yeah? Yes, we're definitely going to be a threat.
We're not nuclear. I'm already feeling it. I'm feeling it in different parts of my body. Not going to go into details where.
Okay, good. Because I don't want to feel any parts of your body.
No. That's what she said. And we've got a look. This podcast, ladies and gentlemen, this is just going to be about things that the Great One and I want to talk about. But we want to talk about with someone else, and not just talk into a microphone and get nothing back in return. Like everything in this world, you want something back. You want people to tell you that you're okay. You want people to tell you, you know, that you're good. You want people, when you take your hat off, you want people to say that you don't have horrible hat hair. You know, the hair that you get when you're wearing a baseball cap and you take it off and your hair's all out of place, that sort of thing. You want people to reassure you. It's reassurance. That's the only reason I'm doing this with the Great One. It's reassurance that I'm okay. Are you still there?
I am still here.
I lost you for a moment. Because there's all this fuzzy buzzing in the background. I hope that doesn't come through on the podcast. That would be really unprofessional.
Be unprofessional.
We've got a few topics, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I hope there's no ladies listening. Not because we're going to be saying rude words, but just because we don't want you around. That's right. This is a man's space. It's a safe space for men.
Oh.
For white men. If you're a black woman listening to this, we particularly don't want you. You know, you've got all your spaces, you know?
Spaces all over the place. Plenty of space for
all
you.
All over the place.
Oh, my God.
We want you gone, you know?
Yes.
I mean, I hate foreigners. You can't go anywhere overseas without bumping into them. It really shits me. All over the place they are. All right. Now, I'm going to start off, I think... After Trump's State of the Union address, his second one that happened last week, you've had, because I'm not American, but really we've had over a year of Donald Trump as the president. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Great One. I think the question on most people's minds now is this. Are Hillary Clinton supporters, and I'm talking hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters here, you know, I'm not talking your fly-by-night swinging voters, you know, that drunk guy in Minnesota that thought he was voting for Bill Clinton and then went on local TV to complain about the fact that he got Hillary instead, yeah? I'm not talking about those Muppets, yeah? I'm talking really hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters, you know? Can you picture them in your mind right now, Great One?
Oh, yes.
Can you picture who I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Like, give me, describe what you're seeing, hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters.
Oh, I'm seeing I saw this one girl all the time during the campaign. It was during the winter, and she's always outside with her Hillary Clinton T-shirt, and she was cold because she couldn't wear a jacket or anything to cover up the T-shirt, and she had her clipboard, and she was so desperately trying to get people to register Democrat and vote for Hillary. And
did to interrupt you there a little bit? Did Trump put out the MAGA hats?
Yes.
Do you think he did that so then people would be able to wear warm jackets?
Ooh.
Do you think that was a critical oversight of the Hillary Clinton campaign to give out T-shirts instead of hats during November?
That's a good point. I never thought of that. That could have been very strategic on Donald Trump's part.
I don't put it past him because Donald Trump is a genius.
Well, he does think ahead.
The ones, when I picture hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters, the ones that that really leap into mind for me are the YouTube video compilations where you've got the people crying into their when the results coming through and Hillary's lost, and they're all crying into their cups of ethically sourced jasmine herbal tea,
which are in their coffee cups that say white male tears on them.
White maid teals, yes. As at that moment, and as Hillary's night, as her entire career, as her entire life went to literal shit. The sort of supporters who'd wear pink pussy hats in public and are actually supposedly men. Yes. These are the sort of people I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The question, like I was saying before, the question on my mind is, do you think after a year of Donald Trump as president, are these people just about at the point of being placed on suicide watch? What do you think?
No, I don't, because...
Really?
No, because here's the thing. I don't think there any of them are going to kill themselves, because they would much rather continue to exist as parasites. And also because killing yourself would require some initiative. And if you have initiative... You're not
like moving to Canada.
Right, exactly, like moving to Canada. I mean, if you have initiative, you're not likely to be a Hillary Clinton supporter. Certainly not a hardcore Hillary Clinton supporter. Right, like maybe the casual kind of dumb support, maybe, but the really hardcore ones, the ones who have the Hillary Clinton T-shirts and the Hillary Clinton bumper stickers, I don't think they have the initiative to kill themselves.
As someone outside the United States, do people still drive around with the Hillary Clinton bumper stickers and the Hillary Clinton T-shirts and the Hillary Clinton rosary beads? Do they still are they still on display? Do they still have this hope that Trump will be impeached?
Yes, I haven't seen the T-shirts lately, but the bumper stickers are certainly still there. I mean, I still see Obama stickers from the first campaign. I mean, once you put that sticker on your car, you're stuck with it. Well, I mean, you could get it off, but again, taking it off requires initiative. So, no, I mean,
do you think that'd make your car harder or easier to sell? I suppose it depends where you live.
Depends on who you're selling it to. And also makes your car either more likely or less likely to be vandalized. I mean, if I were out one night drunk and I had a knife and I wanted to slash some tires... I'd be looking for an Obama sticker.
What? is that a hobby of yours? Do you often
no,
is that like a normal Friday night sort of thing? You know, it's Friday night. I'm out vandalizing Democrats' cars. You know, or you're really at home in your pajamas. Is one of the two.
No, I'm really at home in my pajamas. But if I were going to go out vandalizing Democrats' cars, I mean, that would be a viable option. It would certainly be more entertaining than going to a bar.
What's a typical car that a Democrat drives over there? Do they have like is it like a Prius?
Oh, God,
a Tesla? A Tesla?
I do know one person who has a Tesla, but she's rich, so she can afford it. But no, there's a crap ton of Priuses around here. Prius I's, Prius ums.
I make a point on the road that whenever I see a Tesla, like I'm a very conscientious driver. I'm always like, I try to treat other people on the road how I want to be treated. You know, so for instance, I don't shoot at them.
Okay.
Yeah. So if I see a Tesla driver, then all bets are out the window because you just know they're a wanker. Don't you?
Yes.
You just if you're behind the wheel of a Tesla, not only are you a certified gold standard platinum rated wanker, but you're also a leech because you're using taxpayer subsidies to buy your car.
Yes.
You lord it over the rest of us. But and yet, did you know that electric cars are actually more polluting than normal fuel gas cars?
Yeah, I did know that. I've been trying to tell that to people. Right. Supply chain.
Yeah.
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 And those the batteries car that require all of this strip mining and toxic chemicals to extract the ore and all this other shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, I saw a fantastic video this week of these guys. There's a show in America where they take new cars and they pull them to pieces as part of their show. It's on YouTube. I don't know if you've seen this, but if not, I'll send it to you after this. And basically, the Tesla 3 is a dog.
Really?
you got this old guy. This guy's in his 60s. He looks like he really knows what he's doing. You know, one of those grey-haired 60-year-old guys, barrel-chested, as you know, just don't take any shit from anyone. And he's basically saying to the other guy, saying, "Look, I haven't seen door paneling this bad since early model Kias from the 1990s." So I just thought this is like the feather on the cake, you know. You wanker Tesla drivers have spent all this money on these cars, and they're crap. They are crap. What's better than that? I had a point that I was going with driving on the road with Tesla drivers, but anyway, I cut them off. I'll slow down behind them, or in front of them. I'll slow down in front of them. Yeah, it's 80 kilometers. It's 80 kilometers an hour here. I'm going to do 65. There's nowhere to overtake me, just because I can. And they're right up your bum. You know, right up your bum. And then I'll give them a little brake tap, because I just want them to try and overtake me and then stop me and then get out of the car. It's just like, you're a Tesla driver. You know, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? Is it gonna be like two women fighting? You know, when they put their hands up like cats and close their eyes and just kind of, you know, you're a Tesla driver. I dare you to stop me. I dare you.
It's not like they have a gun rack in the back of that thing. Now see, down in Texas, you'd have your four-wheel drive pickup with the gun rack in the back with three rifles in it.
Yeah. If you drove around with that in Australia, you'd have about 50 cop cars trailing behind you. Anyway. We're going to talk about this memo that you don't know anything about, though it's your country.
Memo. It's not my country. If this were my country, things would be much different. Now, when I'm elected president in 2024, it will be my country. But until then, not my country.
Right. Anyway, look, there was a whole lead up. We were talking before. There was a whole lead up where, right up to the release of the memo, all the Democrats and media who are on their side, which is all the media, were screaming that if this memo was released, then literally, babies would fall out of the sky. Kittens would self-immolate. It would just be a total disaster, and then of course when the memo was released, it's like, nothing to see here. It doesn't mean anything, which is like the whole media on this stuff, that the Democrat aligned media are like a school of fish. Yeah.
Yes.
When they change direction, they all do it at exactly the same time. They're a big school of tuna. No, tuna's not good because tuna are useful. What's the most useless fish that you can't eat?
Tuna are yummy.
My ex-wife. Yeah. anyway. Ba-dum-chick.
Oh, that was a good one.
There we go. Anyway, the release of the document, and I'm talking about this from the Australian point of view because I follow what happens in the Australian media. The document was released before it's released. It was approved by the U.S. Congress, and then it was declassified, mm-hmm. and then it was approved by Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, which is a standard procedure for how to follow this thing. Anyway, the Australian liberal tard prog media have gone with the line across the ball that it's a leaked memo, which is it's kind of weird seeing that it's being declassified, approved by the Congress, approved by the president, and there's all these interviews on TV about they're talking about the leaked memo. I find that and this is kind of like, it's like, it's not that just like you guys in America, you're watching the swarm of media fish all follow each other and turn in the same direction. But the Australian ones follow you as well. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's really bizarre. Really bizarre.
Yeah, and then that shows us the importance, and the media knows this, the importance of controlling the language, right? By calling it a leaked memo. That's an attempt to invalidate it.
Yes.
I mean, that's all that is. It's utilizing the words, oh, it's not information, it's not a fact, it's a leaked memo, right? No. Well, that is alternative news, because alternative is a bad thing, unless, of course, you have an alternative lifestyle or alternative family or alternative gender. In that case, alternative is a good thing and is actually something to be celebrated, right? It's just like who? What the? Oh shit! I just had a.
It's like I'll get another example. It's like in Australia. In Australia, the whites turning up in 200 years ago to settle Australia, it wasn't colonized; it was settled.
Right.
That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But 250,000 immigrants a year from India arriving every year today are good.
Good, yes.
You know, yeah. That's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, here in the States, we have the same thing here in the States, right? When the Europeans came here and settled it, and the Indians were here, oh, it was terrible. But now that we're here and the Muslims want to come over, well, this is wonderful. This is diversity. This is multiculturalism. Right. It's like, well, no. When the Europeans settled in the 1600s, no, that was multiculturalism. We were bringing diversity to the Native Americans.
Speaking of American Indian, I was in a furniture shop last weekend, to my horror, and they had it was a cool furniture shop, actually. They had a lot of cool one-off pieces. It wasn't like this standard mirror. And they had a framed photo of, you know, that classic, you know, turn of the century American Indian black and white photo.
Right.
And the caption, this is a big frame print sort of thing. And the caption was, I'm paraphrasing here, but the caption was basically, oh, so you're against immigration. I'm glad about that. Why don't you pack all your bags? You can pack all your bags and go now. And it's obviously the point was trying to be made that immigration is good, not, you know, not a bad, but they, you looked at it because it was obviously a pro. At this point, I realized I was not going to give this shop any of my money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was obviously social justice warriors, fuckheads in Holland. But it's just like they've tried to make this point, but it's just like, yeah, but the real point is that, yeah, the Indian was right. They lost their culture when
they
all
did.
The foreigners rocked in.
They got
so
wiped out.
So we are going to listen. Yeah, if we are going to listen to the American Indian, we better close those borders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's as an anarchist, you frequently use the same memes. You know, it's like you got the little meme of the American Indian sitting there going, what do you mean you don't trust the government? Why don't you trust your government, right? Because, you know, our government came along and told the American Indians, oh, we're going to leave you alone, and here's your land. Oh, and then we discovered minerals on their land, and we're like, oh, hey, we're taking that land away from you and moving you to this reservation. Oh, you don't want to go? Okay, we'll shoot you. You know, I mean, all of this was done by the government, and then people go, what do you mean you don't trust the government, right? You know, for 8 years of Obama... Yeah. here in the States, especially here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins, I mean, the government was the savior. The government was always right. You should obey the government. The government was here to save you. And then, of course, the Trumpenfuhrer gets elected, and bam, like instantly, the government is now in the hands of the Nazis. The government is coming to kill you. This is the same people. I'm like, what are you people talking about? And this, of course, is what distinguishes the left from the right. Well, people on the right, I can find disagreements with them. People on the right are consistent. People on the left, they're, a person on the left judges something as good or bad, not based on some objective standard of what it constitutes to be good or bad or right or wrong or moral or immoral. They judge it based on the beliefs and the skin color and the gender identity of the person who says it. Right? When Donald Trump wants to close the borders, he's evil. But when Bill Clinton gave a speech about closing the borders...
I'd say it's different. They judge it based on emotion.
Yes. Well, sure.
And whatever. So the feel bads or the feel goods, that's what they base it on.
Yeah.
It's not that they, I mean, these people don't care about colored people. They don't care about, care about illegal immigrants. The closest they're going to get to a legal immigrant is the maid who washes out their toilet. And they don't even know what her fucking name is. You know, they don't give a shit about these people. But it's the virtue signaling feel goods and feel bads that really count.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jumping back to the language real quick, I remember my other example, and this might have I don't remember where I read this. It might have actually been you, who someone wrote about how now the media is trying, because the term cuckservative has become such an insult. The media is now trying to reframe being a cuck as a good thing. They did some article about how men whose wives are cucked are happier or what the fuck ever. It's all about controlling the language.
I know, and the really funny thing about that was what they were describing wasn't a cuckold. A cuckold is someone whose wife does it behind his back. A cuckold can't know.
Exactly.
You know, they were talking about polyamory.
Yes. And those are two. But you also have to remember the average person who watches the Clown News Network or MSNBC, that person doesn't know the difference. That person has no clue what a cuck is or is not. And so when, you know, Katie Bimbo says a cuck is this and being a cuck is wonderful, well, that person's just going to believe it.
Yeah. And that's it, controlling the language. Just like this memo thing, where they're saying in Australia it's being leaked.
Right.
I tell you this, you know, I don't know if you know this about me, but I've leaked a few memos in my time in one of my former careers. Mm. I was an insider. Mm. A political insider, you understand.
Ooh.
The North Melbourne Anarchist All Stars.
Some James Bond stuff here.
Oh, we were big. We ran candidates and everything. Footscray local council elections, 1997.
Ooh.
I tell you what, that was brutal. That was brutal. People don't understand, you know, how brutal that sort of stuff. There was lamplighters, gas lighters, cigarette lighters, everything you can imagine. And lots of memos being leaked. I wrote quite a few myself.
Did you leak crayon them?
I tell you this. If you want to leak a memo, you don't get it officially released by the President of the United States. I tell you that right now. As someone who's done a fair bit of leaking in my time, especially around the back of the Footscray toilet blocks, all right, with a 4-20 pie in my hand. You know, with a sausage roll, all right, and a 4X gold, done a fair bit of leaking, you don't get it officially released by the President of the United States. It's not how you do it. That's the thing that really annoys me. That's the thing that really annoys me about these journalists saying that this memo was leaked. It's the unprofessionalism. It puts the rest of us in a bad name, you know? I mean, what am I going to do with my LinkedIn profile now? Huh? It goes all the way back then. They don't think about that, do they?
Have you tried leaking?
Which people would take some responsibility. Sorry.
Have you tried leaking your LinkedIn profile? Maybe it would.
Listen, I don't.
Maybe it would get more media attention.
I don't want to go. I don't want to go into too many details here. Great one. About my, the tricks that we had. That we had. Let's just say between you and me, a public urinal is a very good place for leaking. And I'm not talking about the innuendo that your dirty and crass mind might be thinking now. If you're standing at a urinal with 20 other blokes in a line, yeah?
Right.
20 other blokes in a line. You've got the little yellow soap cakes there in the bottom of the urinal, and everyone's trying to see if they can, you know, wear a line down the middle of that soap cake, you know? See if they can be the one guy that splits it in half, and we watch the two bits of soap cake float slowly down that urinal, bumping into each other as they go. I tell you, when that sort of thing happens, a hearty cheer reverberates around that toilet block, and the women who are next door in their toilet block wonder what the hell we're doing in there. It's one of the few times you can come out of a toilet block as a man, and the women say to you, what were you all doing in there, and why do you all go in together? Yeah? One of the very few times. I tell you this, great one. If you're standing in a line with 20 blokes, all of you with your dicks out, all of you with your dick in your hand, and there's no homosexuality going on at all, and everyone's, I mean, you're very vulnerable at this point. Women don't understand how vulnerable men are at this point. How this is probably... This is the thing that you take your sons in, you know, their first time at the trough, you know, your son's first time standing at the urinal trough with the blokes, you know, and you're not helping your mum zip his pants. This is important stuff for a young man to understand. I tell you what, great one. You're standing there with 20 blokes. If you happen to say, I might have seen old dodgy Dave down at the pub the other night talking to the bloke from the Teamsters. I tell you what, that's the type of leak I'm talking about. That goes around the place like a shot. Like a shot. And when you do that leak, you don't turn around and then say, oh, yes, and by the way, that was officially released by the President of the United States. Thank you very much. Have you ever done that trick with the soap cakes where you go into your urinal every day and there's the soap cake, the yellow soap cake. You know the soap cakes that I'm talking about in the urinals, the ones that swim down the bottom there, yeah?
Yes.
You know the ones?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you might have it at your workplace, and there's a soap cake there. And every day you go and have a piss, you piss on the soap cake in a straight line from back to front so you don't splash your legs. And every day you do the same thing, and you'll find that other people start, you know, there'll be a line, there'll be a urinal with five places, but everyone will be lined up sooner or later, after a week or so, behind that soap cake. Everyone wants to do their bit. You know, everyone wants to do their bit to cut the soap cake in half. Because as men, we cooperate. That's what we do.
We do.
You know, we do. And I think that's a beautiful thing that many women don't understand about men. But anyway, moving right along. I think we'll leave that one go now.
Anyone who wasn't trying to cut the soap cake is now going to be trying. Suddenly there's going to be soap cakes and urinals all over the planet being cut in half. You just started the trend.
Well, I mean, you've never done that before? That's never occurred to you?
Well, no, I mean, I always target it, of course. But I've never consciously thought about cutting it in half.
You've got to have purpose and meaning to your life.
I do. I just hadn't previously included the urinal soap cakes in that meaning. I mean, I'm going to expand my horizons. Don't worry. I mean, you have inspired me to be better.
Well, maybe one day this could be an Olympic sport.
God, looking at some of the other things that are Olympic sports, I don't know why not. I'd rather watch this than curling.
Probably not in the Winter Olympics, though.
Ooh, ow. Well, I don't know. Wouldn't that add some interesting challenge, though?
Well, piss yellow in the snow. I don't know. Anyway, I sent the great one a link to the Victorian, as in Melbourne, Australia. Victorian Premier's Literary Awards for 2018 were announced. The winners were announced yesterday. By the way, the winner of this award, great one, got a cool $100,000.
Wow.
Of taxpayer money.
So this is a government-funded thing.
Ah, the Victorian Premier. So the Premier is like your state governor.
Got it. So people are paying taxes to pay other people to write.
Yes. So
God, fantastic.
The winner of this got a cool $100,000, but everyone awarded an award got a cool $25,000.
Whoa.
As well. So the winner got $100,000 and $25,000. $20,000 for the category that they won, and then $100,000 for being the overall winner. So that's $125,000. You don't have to get out a calculator. So there was the thing about this year is that every single one of the six winners are women. Do you have that link open at the photo there, the tweet from Benjamin Law? Do you have that in front of you?
I do not have it in front of me. I'm slacking.
All right, so if you can get that up there, the six women, so we have, and the tweet from an Australian ABC journalist, Benjamin Law, who is a horrible social justice warrior.
Wait. So, as opposed to a non-horrible social justice warrior?
It is a particularly horrible social justice warrior. His tweet was a photo of the six winners, and so bloody pleased about this year's Victorian Premier's Literary Award winners, all women, amongst them many women of colour and queer writers. And so it's wonderful when we have six winners and they're all women. And it's particularly wonderful when there's no white men amongst those winners at all. That's diversity. That's equal opportunity, right, as regards to the SJWs. Now, looking at that photo, do you have the photo up in front of you?
I got the photo now.
So, we've got six women, supposedly.
Supposedly
six women. Now, the woman who won is in the black and red there in the foreground. She's the overall woman. Oh. Her book. She was born in the United States, by the way. Her name is Sarah Krasnostein. but she now lives and lectures in criminal law at Monash University. I think what that means is she tells everyone to let all the black people go free.
Right.
Her debut book, which won the prize of $125,000, tells the true story of Melbourne transgender woman Sandra Pankhurst's life and career, cleaning the scenes of violent crimes. Now, if that's not an absolute showstopper, take a book to bed and be kept up all night riveted by the seat of your pants, I don't know what is. And I tell you what, great one, she definitely deserves that award. I can't wait to pick up a book and read about a transgender woman's life and career cleaning the scenes of violent crimes. I don't know about you, but that really gets the juices flowing. I have to confess here that I was also initially approached, I might add, to be a finalist in this year's awards for my book, Pushing Rubber Downhill. And I thought that this was a real opportunity for a man to be able to break down the walls, the pink walls that surround the entire profession of the written word in Australia. But when they found out that Pushing Rubber Downhill wasn't about latex transsexual sex, the offer was withdrawn for me to participate, unfortunately. But, you know, that's how the cookie crumbles in the literary awards. Would you sleep with any of those women, by any chance? What about the blue-haired one?
Oh.
The blue-haired one's particularly impressive, isn't she?
The blue-haired one is excruciatingly impressive. Would the great one... Yeah, I'm going to go with no. I'm going to go with
no.
There is not that much alcohol on the planet Earth. No, I'm not sleeping.
It doesn't look like any of those women... It doesn't look like any of them are over the age of 30... but I think most of these ones hit the wall when they were born.
Well, I was going to say, the one in the very back, the long black hair with the white, whatever that is, she looks over 30 to me. I mean,
yeah, she does.
She looks like she's hit some walls hard.
Or Or she's ridden a lot of cock to get where she is. It's one of the two.
Exactly. It's not That's always right. the age, it's the mileage.
Well, sometimes it's a bit of both.
And sometimes it's both.
Life is not binary. Remember that. Right. Tell me, do you plan on buying her debut book, which tells the true story of a transgender woman's life and career cleaning the scenes of violent crimes?
I mean, as tempting as that is, as tempting as that could be, I think I have some other things I want to read first. I'm going to have to go with no. Now, you know,
okay.
In all honesty, I might get the book from the library because I need something to laugh at and make fun of.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen your proclivity to do that on your podcast episode.
A little teaser, the book I'm about to pick up from the library, and I'm pretty sure I'll make fun of it, is the book, you may or may not have heard of this, it's called something like, I wrote it, and I have it in front of me, I think I do, yes, it's called How Do I Explain This to My Kids? It's about how to explain to your children that Donald Trump is the president, and how to explain the racism and the Hitlerism and the Nazism. And I was at the library yesterday and looking at it and just falling over with laughter. So that will be an upcoming episode. That looks hilarious. But,
excellent.
You know, liberals excellent. Have to write books like this. How do you explain to your children that Donald Trump is president? Like, well, you tell them about the Electoral College and voting and that other people have different opinions than you. And then if you were a good person and you actually cared about the earth, you'd go and kill yourself. But you're a liberal parasite and you're not going to take initiative, are you?
No, I definitely won't do that. So you're not going to buy the book on transgender women cleaning the scenes?
Definitely not paying money for it, no.
Okay. Even though it features a transgender woman?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a pull. I mean, knowing that there's a transgender... Now, wait, if it's a transgender woman, does that mean it started as a woman and is transgendering, or does that mean you started as a man and transgendering?
See, this is why I just prefer saying a trans testicle. You know?
Yeah, I just prefer saying
Andrew Dice Clay had it right.
Yes.
All those years ago. I just don't... I mean, I understand the attraction to put on a dress, and I have to admit that I have done it once or twice before myself. Have you ever been tempted to put on the lippy and a frock?
The lippy? Is that lipstick?
The lippy. Yeah. Yeah, we call it the lippy in Australia.
No, I've never put on lippy, but I've certainly worn a dress. I've also taken off a few dresses. I've lifted some dresses.
Lifted some dresses, yes. Back in the war, we got pretty bored, you see. I mean, war is 90%, you know, war is 99% boredom and 1% running around with your bum on fire, don't you?
Yes.
So we used to get a bit bored. So we used to put on these shows for our troop. Yeah.
Yes.
The lucky units got the shows that entertain the troops. We didn't get that. So we had to entertain ourselves. But someone always had to draw the short straw to be the Sheila of the show. Yeah?
Yes.
A Sheila is a woman in Australia.
Yes. I know Sheila and Bent.
Yeah, so one day I drew the shorts. Oh, and Macca's.
Macca's.
That's McDonald's.
No.
We're going to Macca's. That's McDonald's.
Got it.
Get a hamburger.
See, guys, this podcast is educational, people. Educational.
There you go. Anyway, one evening I drew the short straw. And I had to be the Sheila. So what you do is you'd put on a dress that you'd probably taken from some villager that you'd shot earlier in the day. And you put on some lippy and maybe a wig made out of rice paddy straw or something like that. And you went at it and you did your very best. You did your very best because it was for the troops, you know, for the boys.
Right. Yeah.
You were doing your bit. You were wearing a dress. You were wearing some lippy. You were your dress stolen from some villager in some rice paddy somewhere. After you shot it, all the rest of it, that was all fine. Yeah. And the troops applauded. And you got a. I tell you what, you were really happy if you got a few wolf whistles. There's nothing more powerful for a man. There's nothing more powerful for a man than wearing a dress and some lippy and getting wolf whistles from blokes who know who he actually is under all that get-up. I can understand the attraction for these trans-testicle fellas. You understand what I'm saying? The best bit, I haven't got to the best bit yet.
Mm.
The best bit was when you'd go back to your tent by yourself and you're all alone. And you can hear the hum of the voices out there. They're waiting for you to get undressed and come back out and join in the festivities. And you just be sitting there in the darkness on your cot, yeah, in a dress,
mm-hmm.
Stolen dress, in your lippy. And you'd start to talk to yourself as a woman. And you start to talk to yourself so that you could then talk back as yourself, as a man. And pretty soon you were convinced that you're in there with a woman. And then of course things just take their natural turn, and you've been away from home for a very long time, and before you know it the two of you are in there having the best time of your life, you know. And it's instructive because we generally found that the next time a show would come up, someone who'd spent a long time getting changed back into their kit would be the first to put their hand up to be the Sheila. but we had to draw the straw. You have to keep up appearances. You can't just admit, you know what I mean? But everyone was on edge. I tell you that right now. Everyone was on edge. That straw. And the best part was the young fellas that just joined the platoon didn't know what all the fuss was about, but we knew. The old hands knew. You know, the young fellas had their names in the pot. We knew. And they'd come out dressed up, and we'd make sure we'd give them a lot of wolf whistles because we wanted to make that time count. Because the next day they could be shot and killed and murdered in horrible ways, you know. So I understand the whole trans-testicle thing. I just wanted to say that. But you've never yourself put on a dress in that way.
Not in that way, no.
I see. Do you share a house with anyone at the moment with a dress?
No.
You work in the theater though, don't you? You must have easy access to dresses.
Oh, I have access to dresses out the wazoo. Absolutely.
Well, I tell you what, at the end of this podcast, you've got a whole day in front of you. You've got two mm-hmm. things to do. You've got yellow soap cakes to
yep.
cut in half with the stream of your urine.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And you've got a whole new way of looking at trans testicles. Think about that.
And if you're wearing a dress, that makes it much easier to cut the soap cake in half because you don't have to unzip anything. You just lift.
Oh, that's quite brilliant, isn't it? I suppose that the whole trans testicles being able to use the women's bathroom doesn't really make sense at all in that regard, does it?
Well, there's no cake in
there. They'd be better off going into the men's toilet.
Of course they would, because then they can cut the cake.
Cutting the cake. Gives a whole new meaning to the term.
Cutting the cake. That actually sounds like a really good title for this podcast episode.
The cake cutting episode.
Cake cutting.
All right. I did the intro. You do the sponsors.
There are no sponsors. However, if you would like to sponsor, if let's say for, okay, so here's the sponsors we would like to have, though, if you'd like to come on board. If you manufacture the little yellow cakes that go in urinals, we would love for you to sponsor this show. Absolutely love to have you on board.
That would be fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're an insider and you leak memos, we'd love to have you. We'd love to do an interview with that insider.
Yes.
Someone who leaked this memo.
A memo leaker. If you're the president of the United States and you approve leaked memos, we absolutely, please, we will be happy to sponsor you.
Yeah, yeah. No, he'd be happy to sponsor us, wouldn't he?
No, yeah. So I'm getting confused.
Anyone. No. Jeez. Pull it together, man.
You know, talking about the media, I saw something on the interwebs the other day, some media outrage. Did you know, Adam, that Donald Trump has been raising money for his re-election campaign? He actually has money for his re-election campaign. This is the most terrible thing ever. I mean, Obama never raised money for his re-election, and Donald Trump is actually raising money for his re-election campaign. I mean, the man is literally Hitler. Literally Hitler.
Oh.
He is. No, Hitler raised money for campaigns, and Donald Trump is raising money for campaigns. The man is literally Hitler. I mean, any moment now, the concentration camps are going to be built.
If only.
If only. I know. I keep wishing. But it was the most hilarious thing. The outrage that Donald Trump is daring to raise money for his reelection.
Do you think they're more outraged and upset about raising money or the prospect of Donald Trump being elected again?
Oh, God. I think the idea of him getting elected again is terrifying. I think that's why I think that's why they're throwing Oprah at him.
Oh, Oprah.
I would love to see that. Oprah.
I mean, the Democrats fielded the most useless candidate in the history of presidential elections, which was a big ask, but I think they could beat it with Oprah.
They could.
I think they could beat it.
Right. I mean, you would think you can't get worse than Hillary, but if they throw out Oprah, but God, the entertainment value of that will be phenomenal. I mean, the memes that will come out of that
one. Do you think they'll come out with lots of polls that show that Trump's losing by a long way?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Do they 95% of... You know what's the funny thing is? You go back and look at the stuff leading up like the few days before the actual election, and they CNN and these MSNBC and whatever the hell, they've literally got guys up there with graphics showing that 95%, you know, it's going to vote for Hillary or whatever. And this is the sort of stuff that third world Tim Pot... communist dictatorships used to do, like the great leader has been re-elected with 99.999% of the vote. You know, that we used to make fun of this. You know, we used to be like, oh, those bloody third worlders again, eh? Having an election.
Oh, so
he got 99% of the vote. That was a little bit of and then there they are, 95% chance, Hillary 98% chance. I was just like, ah, oh, lack of self-awareness.
Oh my god.
But you know what? It's guaranteed. I'll tell you this right now, it's guaranteed. The 2020 election is guaranteed to play out exactly the same way. Because if there's one thing we know about liberal progtards, they do not ever learn from anything. It's gonna play out exactly this is the surest bet of all time. Donald Trump in 2020. This is just absolute. Because they will convince themselves that they did nothing wrong.
Yep.
And that it was a fluke. Yep. And that Trump cheated. And they'll get fucking Bernie Sanders to run, probably. who literally is the reincarnation of the guy from Kentucky Fried Chicken. Or he's Mr. Magoo. It's one of the two. They'll get him to run. You know, he'll be the only Democrat nominee standing, and he'll still fuck it up. Wasn't that funny though? You had 17 Republican candidates battling it out with each other, you know, and then the Democrats had two. It was like, all right, we're gonna pick Hillary, but I suppose we gotta pick someone else just for form. Who can we get? What about that old communist? You know, that's always asleep in the back row over there. Oh yeah, he actually gave her a run for her money.
You have to make it look like there's a choice. Again, you know, for the dumb people. The dumb people have to think they had an option.
The best part of that was the people who are chronic Bernie Sanders supporters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's dumb. And then there's like, who were really believed. Who really believed. You saw them at the Bernie Sanders rallies, you know, they're wearing all the gear. They had the T-shirts as well. Feel the burn. They must have been really cold. They had the T-shirts. They had it all there.
Oh, they had the bumper stickers.
I tell you what.
and I still see them. So there's this thing. So you'll see that I see this quite frequently on the cars. They have the Feel the Burn bumper sticker or Bernie, you know, 2817 or whatever the fuck it was, right?
Yeah.
And then next to it, there's a little square sticker that says, okay, Hillary will do.
So they lost.
Right,
so
when they found out they lost, someone actually made little stickers that you could put next to your Bernie sticker that says, okay, Hillary will do.
And do they have another little sticker next to that that says, Trump, I'm moving to Canada?
No, but they should have one next to it that says, I can't find Canada.
Yeah, I can't find Canada. Can't find Still Canada. Looking.
Still looking.
Still looking.
It's north.
Yeah.
Go north, guys. Go Did north.
Did anyone famous who threatened to move to Canada actually do it?
No one that I know, and believe you me, I know plenty of people who said that they were leaving. No, they're all still here. Oh no!
Definitely. Do you ever like not in their face, but surreptitiously, slyly bring that up in conversation?
Every once in a while. Unfortunately, most of these people are people I know from work, and unlike them, I don't talk about politics at work because that's not what I'm there for. But I have some friends too, and every once in a while I remind them of which way Canada is, because I don't know anyone who voted for Trump.
Oh, really? All your friends are liberals?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Right.
I mean, I know there are Trump supporters here in the People's Republic because I see the stickers and the signs, but all the people I know, they're all Hillary voters.
And you don't go hang out in Trump bars or anything like that.
Yeah, I would if I knew where a Trump bar was at.
Right.
But I don't really hang out in bars either. I mean, except for when I'm wearing a dress.
A working class side of town, somewhere that, you know, the other side of the tracks.
Right.
It's the neon lights kind of buzzing, because it's going out. Dave's Bar. I've always found that a bar called Dave's Bar is a good bar. Bar. Or Al's Bar. Al's Bar. Al's Bar is very good. Anyone out there listening who's thinking of opening a bar, if you call it Alan Dave's Bar, I think you'll clean up. I'm just saying. All right.
Agreed.
Do we have anything else to discuss? I can't remember.
Did the memo.
We did the
Trans-Testicle Literary Awards.
Yeah.
Didn't we really talk about the immigration thing?
We didn't, did we? There's Mr. Deng. How long have we got? Have we done an hour? Well, how are we going time-wise?
No, because we babbled for a while at the beginning, so we're probably at about 50 minutes.
Oh, that's a pretty good time. I think we can wrap that. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, it's the first one. We're making this up as we go along. We're figuring it out.
I mean, don't you make up your podcast as you go along every week?
Mostly. I mean, sometimes I have notes that I ignore. Actually, happens pretty fucking frequently with me. I have these notes and actually never get to anything on the list because I start tangenting. But every once in a while, I do the notes.
That's good. So this was the cake cutting episode on the Greasy Pole podcast. This has been Adam Piggott talking to the great one, Holland to Fort Collins, and we hope that you've all enjoyed this inaugural show. If you have any suggestions, any ways that you think we can improve the show,
shove them up your
don't
ass.
Hesitate. Yeah, don't hesitate not to write in, because we're not interested.
Although if you want to put that in a memo and leak it, that would be totally okay.
Whoa, that would be okay. If you can leak it and it can get out there somewhere somehow that maybe MSNBC takes it seriously and thinks it's a really big thing, give it a code name like cake cutters, cake cutting or something like that, that'd be good. That'd be good. So it's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from you as well.
It is.
Goodbye from him.
Goodbye, it's goodbye from us.
Hey. Goodbye from Zay.
And Z and Zer and Faye.
And we'll hopefully see you next week. Oh, I thought that went all right.